Welcome into episode 18 of the State Line Fast Break podcast. I'm your host, Casey Boone. Alongside me, as always, the great Josh Miller.
Here we go. NBA Finals are here, and we are here to give our predictions today. We're also going to address other big news around the NBA as some coaching moves are active right now around the league. Let's get right into it.
Game 1 NBA Finals is set Thursday, June 5th, 8:30 in Oklahoma City as the Pacers and Thunder meet in a very highly anticipated finals matchup while also being two low market teams that may not have the best ratings, but the basketball I think most people would like to believe is going to be really exciting to watch. The Thunder come in as overwhelming favorites to win this series, as they are minus 750 on almost every sports book to win the series, and they are heavy favorites to do this under 5.5, which is the line of games. They're currently a almost 10-point favorite to take game one. 69% of the public bets coming in on their money line. This one seems like most people are writing off the Pacers. The Thunder, obviously a incredibly talented, very deep team led by Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the MVP. It's going to be a battle of guards, which the Pacers have guards that are very scoring-minded. The emphasis is on the offensive side of the ball, where the Thunder have been one of the best defensive teams in the last couple decades. And what they do best is they make guards uncomfortable, whether that's Caruso, Dort, the Williams, Wallace. Like, they put so much pressure on the guards. This one seems like it's going to come down to Tyrese Halliburton versus Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, which star guard leads his team the best, steps up to the moment. I'm incredibly excited for this, and this is going to lead us into quite a chaotic offseason, which we're going to get into. But Pacers versus Thunder, many people would not have predicted this to be the case coming into the year, but here we are, Josh, and I think I know where you're going to go with this series, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on how you break this down, how many games you see this in. Do you think the Thunder get a sweep potentially? Do the Pacers have a chance? What are your thoughts on this series?
So I'm going to rewind back to opening night of the NBA. I watched the Boston Celtics play the New York Knicks. I said, and a lot of people said, the betting favorite back then was the I thought the Celtics were going to match up with the Oklahoma City Thunder in this year's finals. And one of those two teams have made it here. And this Oklahoma City Thunder team is on an historic pace, and whether it feels like it or not, just because they've only got one star who really, I think we'll have to have some more conversations throughout the summer if he goes on to win this championship. And Shai Gilgeous, where does he sort of rank? Because he's doing things that only few players in NBA history have ever done, whether if it's Steph Curry, winning an MVP and a championship in the same season by a guard's only been done by, I believe, Michael Jordan, Stephen Curry, Magic Johnson, and maybe one other guy. It's putting him into some rare air as far as guards go in the history of the NBA. And it just doesn't seem like it, just because he's sort of burst onto the scene here the past 2 years. But this team overall is just loaded with not superstars, but with just key role players, just from top to bottom. And they're playing guys in this past Timberwolves series that they didn't even play against Denver a single minute. I'm sure they'll throw guys out there in this series that we're not expecting. Mark Dagnall's got a million things up his sleeve. And we're also got the two – I mentioned the Boston Celtics didn't make it here, but these are the two deepest teams in basketball, and they both make their way to the finals. But this is a terrible matchup for the Pacers, in my opinion. And the Pacers provide many matchup issues across the Eastern Conference, as we saw throughout this playoff run. but actually the past two playoff runs. But they're just, in my opinion, how this is going to go is the Pacers, the one matchup that they cannot, the one team they don't match up with is Oklahoma City here. And you could just go across the board. I mean, they're going to throw so many guys at Halliburton. I've listened to some podcasts. I'm sure you've listened to some of the same ones. I believe, I can't remember who it was, but they mentioned that the two regular season matchups that Tyrese Halliburton had some of his lowest usage rates of his entire season against the Oklahoma City Thunder. I just think that there's nobody who's going to be able to match Shea. I mean, you're getting 30 out of Shea. It seems every single night he's going to get that, regardless of who they're going to throw at him, whether if it's Nesmith, Nembhard. I'm just not sure who's going to be able to bother him for 38 minutes. And whoever steps up, whether if it's Jalen Williams or Chet, whoever it is, they seem to take turns on who steps up. I think Chet Holmgren's got a real shot to insert himself into some pretty serious conversations depending on his finals here. But overall, I've said a lot of key things here about the Oklahoma City Thunder team, and that's deservingly so because they've had such an historic season, in my opinion, especially in the past, I'd say, 10 years. Whether if it seems like it just based on their roster as far as their name and star power goes. But to answer your question that I was prompted with, I have gone back and forth on whether if I think it's a sweep or not. And I really wanted to say sweep. But, you know, I've bet against the Pacers so many times, except against the Knicks. I did pick them against the Knicks. But that was the only time I did. And I hate to do it, but I'm going to have to go against them again and side with where all the money's going. And that is to have the Oklahoma City Thunder win in five games. I think the Pacers will steal a game. I think the Thunder, I think there's a game where Jalen Williams doesn't show up. Maybe Shea doesn't necessarily get the whistle he's accustomed to in just one of these games, but he's always going to get the whistle no matter how the game's really being officiated, it seems, which is a credit to him and how he's sort of maneuvered his way to get 30 points every single night. So I said a lot here, and there's a lot more things we can dive into with it, but I'm going to choose the chalk answer of Oklahoma City in five games.
I'm in a similar line of thinking. The Thunder, they're just too deep, too talented. It's not a great matchup, like you mentioned, for the Pacers. What they do well is exactly what the Oklahoma City Thunder is equipped to defend. The guard play that the Pacers have, I just don't see Nembhard, Nesmith, some of these guys having the same level of impact that they've had in the last few series. The Thunder guards are going to be able to match up well. And they go 5-6-7. They're going to throw so many different bodies at all these guards. They're going to see different defending styles, different ways that guys want to attack you. Unlike Jalen Brunson, you can't, like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, the Thunder don't really have to hide him like what the Knicks had to do with Brunson and Cat, because Hartenstein, Chet Holmgren, those are both solid defenders. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is not a terrible defender. I mean, he's solid. He can give you a pretty good effort. One of the best, I would say, stealing guards, instinct guards at that position for the caliber of player that he is, that you don't typically see these guys play defense. The Thunder just equipped so many different ways to beat you that the Pacers really, a guy that we don't talk about a whole lot, but Miles Turner is going to have a very important role in this series. Can he mitigate some of the impact that you're going to, I mean, Hartenstein and Chet are both significant forces down low and they have quite a different play style. Chet can pull you out on the perimeter. Hartenstein is more of a thumper down low. He's going to see two different style bigs. Can he mitigate some of the impact that those two guys can make? Pascal Siakam's going to have to give you 25-10 tonight. You can't have a game where he disappears. Coming off a Eastern Conference Finals MVP, which I think was very surprising. Most people probably would pencil in Tyrese Halliburton as that guy. But I think really off the back of that early performance that Siakam had, he kind of won that award. But the Pacers are they're going to have to go deep into their lineup, and they're going to have to get consistent production. You can't have guys disappear. You're going to have Nesmith and Nembhard give you something. These guys can't be completely taken out of the game by these Thunder guards. If Mathurin gives you what he gave you at the end of that Knicks series, where he spark plugged, gave you 21 off the bench, I think, in one of those games, it's going to be a complete performance from the Pacers to get this thing done. But I just don't see them having enough. I do think there's a chance that they can extend this series out. I will take the Thunder to win in six games, just out of the respect I have for what the Pacers have done. I was listening to something today that I thought made a pretty good comparison. This series feels very similar to what the Miami Heat Dallas Mavericks series felt back in 2011, where you had this unbelievable roster that was put together with the Heat and the Thunder versus these underdogs, the Mavericks, who obviously had the one big star in Dirk Nowitzki, and then they had really good players around them. That's what this Pacers team feels like. Ironically enough, they're both coached by Rick Carlisle. Similarities include Eric Spoelstra, Mark Dagnall being two very young, inexperienced coaches at the time, who obviously Spoelstra hadn't risen to the coach that he is today, and Dagnall hasn't really had a ton of experience in the playoffs. And Carlisle, I think, a very experienced coach, a very underrated coach historically, actually moved into, I think, top 10 all time in playoff wins as a head coach. Can he outcoach Mark Dagnall like he did Eric Spoelstra in that series? Can Tyrese Halliburton be the best player in the series like Dirk Nowitzki was back then? There's a lot of similarities here. I think top to bottom, this Oklahoma City roster is much better than that Miami Heat roster was. And I don't know that the Pacers have maybe some of the talent level that sneakily that Mavericks team had. I think they're probably pretty underrated historically, but that's an interesting comparison that I think that you could kind of gauge the series based on. Heavy favorite Thunder going up against the underdog Pacers. But look, this Pacers team, since the start of 2025, I think to end the regular season, they had the third most wins in the calendar year of 2025. They got hot at the right moment. They got a favorable draw for them matchup-wise throughout the entire East playoff run. This one just seems like the Oklahoma City Thunder are a buzzsaw. And I just don't know that the Pacers have enough to get this done.
Yeah, I'm glad you sort of pointed out the things about the Pacers because it sounded like I gave them sort of no credit based on the chance I give them in this series. And it's really not a knock against them at all because it's very impressive what they've done, not only this year, but the past 2 years to make it to the conference finals and now to the NBA finals. I mean, they've had a number of guys step up. And like I said, I think they're the second deepest team in basketball, only behind Oklahoma City. And a guy who I talked about, I believe, last episode, maybe the one before, was how impressed I've been overall with the career arc of Pascal Siakam. He now adds this Eastern Conference Finals MVP, which I'm not a huge fan of this award personally. Maybe it's just because it's new, and not real sure how to sort of judge it into people's resumes, but it's here. We got it. And I feel like I kind of have to throw it in here. So he has added that to his resume. He's been to the finals. He's won the finals back with Toronto in 2019. And he had some big games in that series that they beat the Warriors in. I believe he averaged 20-10, which I mean, to play in your first finals and average 20-10, had some big games. I believe he had almost 30 in the closeout game of that series. Like, he's been just so, he's been very steady, very impressive. We talk about Tyrese Halliburton so much, and rightfully so. I mean, he's a borderline superstar in this league if he's not already. and he does so many different things with the Pacers team, and he's giving you that old style sort of point guard feel with even high scoring abilities. But Pascal Siakam coming over from Toronto in that trade just has been so steady for him. I know Rick Carlisle, listening to him over the past couple of weeks, has really raved about his impact, his leadership towards that team. So I'm not going to, you know, sit here and crap on the Pacers just because they're in a bad matchup. But the reason I mentioned Chet Holmgren really has a chance to legitimize himself here among the NBA landscape as a whole is because he's probably going to see Pascal Siakam a good bit. And Pascal Siakam's a guy who's going to go at you no matter who you are. But I think Chet Holmgren's offense has been, you know, up and down throughout the playoffs. But one thing that's been steady with him is his defense. Really, since he's gotten into the league, we sort of judge him up against your guy, Victor Wembanyama, who's, you know, probably going to go down as the best defender of all time. But I think Chet Holmgren is a tremendous defender, especially help side blocks, even, you know, so I think this is a big test for him. And he's young, that he's really, you know, I guess he's technically in what, his third year in the NBA. So he's in a real position to give himself a really good kick to his career if he, because he's gonna go. I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and say it, but there's an argument out there that Pascal Siakam can end up being in the Hall of Fame, especially if they win this series and he goes out and potentially gets a Finals MVP from it. But you know, Pascal Siakam's a great player anyway, so he's gonna get that challenge. Although that's the thing about the Thunder. They're going to throw everybody at him. I mean, they're going to throw Hartenstein, who I think is a pretty good defender, at him, who I'm curious to see how much Dagnall watches the Knicks series from last year, if there was any maybe Siakam Hartenstein matchups. I can't totally remember off the top of my head how those two sort of go at each other. But in both the matchups this year, Chet Holmgren didn't even play in the two regular season matchups between the Pacers and the Thunder. But, you know, you highlighted a lot more of the Pacers' success here. And, you know, all those guys you've mentioned have had big moments. I mean, we mentioned it last episode, but if it's not for an Aaron Nesmith 9 threes in a game one in Madison Square Garden, there's a chance that the Knicks are in the finals and Tom Thibodeau is joyful as ever on that Knicks sideline still. Like, so I got to give credit to the Pacers of even getting to this point because, you know, I respect them as a team. Obviously, Rick Carlisle's really been deservingly getting a lot of credit here lately, but he's always been a great elite coach. I'm glad to see him get his flowers. And, you know, I tip my cap to what the Pacers have done, and let's see if they can prove me wrong for about the 10th time that I've doubted them. But I just think they're running up against a true, true juggernaut.
Yeah, it's like you mentioned, the big matchup, I think, is the fascinating thing that most people are not going to talk about. You gave Chet a lot more credit than I'm ever going to give him, so I'll leave it at what you said. But yeah, Hartenstein matchup with Siakam and Turner, it's going to be, I would imagine, they're going to put Siakam on Chet Holmgren. It just makes a lot more sense. The skill sets match up better there. And then Hartenstein and Turner, that's kind of a seamless matchup. I don't know. I kind of like that matchup for the Pacers. That might be the one advantage that they have, and we'll see if they're able to go to it and exploit it. But you just kind of look back at both these conference finals. It's very clear the separation that these guys have made, that Tyrese Halliburton has propelled himself into stardom, superstardom. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, obviously the MVP, is a superstar. And as much as we like Brunson, didn't quite match the level that Halliburton got to in that series, and I think we're both fans of what Anthony Edwards can become, but it's clear he was not ready for that moment. Has not been a playoff riser to this point in his career, and he just was it, that whole Timberwolves team was just completely outclassed by this Thunder roster. And but we'll get into it a little bit talking about Durant here in a minute, but the Timberwolves have a lot of decisions to make. They got Randle, Nickeil Alexander, Naz Reid now sitting in a position where they can all be free agents, and they're not going to be able to bring them all back more than likely. And then there's the trade pieces that we can get into as the offseason gets going. But yeah, these two teams just outclassed their conference. The Pacers took down the Cavs, who was neck and neck with the Thunder for much of the year, looked like an unbeatable force in the Eastern Conference. They took them down no problem and kind of ran through the Knicks. I mean, they had a little resistance in game five. The Knicks were able to go back to Madison Square Garden, but I don't think there was ever a worry in that game six that the Pacers were going to lose there. They had so much confidence. Their guys just, both these teams, their guys just fly around. They play so hard. They're well coached. There's not a ton of flaws on their roster, not a lot of holes that you can pick at. And so to me, it's just the Thunder talent and depth, I think, is just a little bit higher and a little bit better. And they both want to play similar styles, get up and down the court. And I just think the Thunder force so many turnovers from their opponents that if you're going to get into a track meet with the best track meet team that we've seen in a long time, I just don't think it bodes well for the Pacers. But I think an interesting thing that is going to become heavy in the offseason discussion is if this Thunder team gets it done, where does Shai Gilgeous-Alexander rank all time as an Oklahoma City Thunder? I think there's going to be a lot of people that is going to put him as the best player to ever wear a Thunder uniform. Will be the right up there as the most accomplished, most wins that this franchise has had in a year, wins the MVP, wins the conference finals MVP. And then presumably if they win this, he's going to win the finals MVP as well and bring the first championship to the Oklahoma City Thunder. And so I think that's going to be a very interesting conversation. Obviously, the guy that we're going to dive into in a little bit, Kevin Durant, will have something to say about that, just the talent level, the skill set that he has, and what he meant to both the Sonics and Thunder organization until he snaked them for the Golden State Warriors. But Shai Gilgeous-Alexander making a real case to be the best Thunder player to ever wear that uniform.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I think most people are gonna still lean with Nikola Jokic as the best player in the association today. I think it's clear and obvious, but I'm just gonna put myself in someone who would be a Shai Gilgeous fan. You know, if you're Shai, like, what else can you do? I mean, you go out there, you lead the league in scoring, you almost lead the league in defensive win shares. Given at least 5 rebounds a game. And one thing this is really where, and you know, he's gotten to the finals and I credit him for that. But the main thing I've been not necessarily shocked by, but just because I know he's such a great player, but the one thing I've really got to give him credit for is his playmaking ability in these playoffs, because he's been blitzed, he's been, you know, seen all kinds of defenses, and this is what I think has separated him from Anthony Edwards. And I'm not saying Anthony Edwards won't get there yet, because Shai's a little bit older, but there's been multiple games in this playoff where Shai has gone over 8 assists, 9 assists, 10 assists, but even the hockey assist he's getting, I mean, he's not a, you know, he's not Tyrese Halliburton with passing the ball, but he's been extremely efficient passing the ball. You can tell he's honed in on it, because last year against Dallas really was a something, or a reason they didn't make it through was at times you could see he wasn't necessarily the most comfortable being that playmaker. And but I just can't say enough about his playmaking ability throughout this playoffs. And I think that's a part of the reason why they're so dominant. And, you know, there's a number of reasons, but, you know, look, I've been, you know, I guess you got the Jokic-Shea argument sort of all year long. I'm always going to be on that Jokic side, and I still think he is the best player in the league. But for once, you know, I got to sit down here and really give Shea his credit, because, like I said, I didn't think he was as good of a playmaker as he's really shown, and he's shown it. And as far as where he'll rank as a Thunder player, I mean, there's a true argument he would be the best Thunder player ever. I mean, maybe I wouldn't go there just quite yet. Maybe I need to see one more year. But he would have done something Kevin Durant never did, which was, you know, win the championship and be that star player on. But Kevin Durant, you know, he was just so consistent for so long and still is, but especially in Oklahoma City. So I wouldn't say he's there just yet, although he's right on the doorsteps. I have him past, I would, if he wins this championship, I would move him past Russell Westbrook on that Oklahoma City, you know, lineup. But even more so Oklahoma City greats, I mean, where will he rank among NBA players? I mean, I don't think he's anywhere. I don't think he's top 20 or anything like that yet. But, you know, he's not even 30 yet. You give him a couple more years if he does the exact same thing, he could get into that top 20, I think. Obviously, it's going to take a lot of time, or a lot more time, a lot more years of consistent 30-point-a-night scoring, which he seems like he's going to be capable of. But, you know, there's a couple guys we've got to see in our lifetime that, you know, are really in that top 20 conversation, whether if it's LeBron, Curry, Kevin Durant, Duncan, Jokic. I believe those are the main guys that we saw in our lifetime as far as top 20 goes. And, you know, that's the thing about Shea. We're beginning to sort of think about where he could rank historically, which shows his greatness. When we've seen it, I mean, go through the greats. Like the past couple of years, the conversations that surround Jokic are, you know, where does he rank all time? Like that's really where you start showing your true greatness, is when those conversations start. And the fact that we're even mentioning a question like that or surrounding Shea Gilgeous-Alexander just credits his greatness. And I really just wanted to explain to you all, as someone who's been on the opposite side of SGA all year long, how impressed I am with not only his consistent scoring, but his, I would say, almost elite playmaking this entire playoff run. And we will see if he can do it in this finals run. And it seems to me like he can.
Yeah, it's very well said about what he has become as a player. And I want to talk more to the testament of the two front offices here. Obviously, Sam Presti was the youngest assistant general manager in the history of the league when RC Buford and the Spurs took a chance on him at a very, very young age, and then become the youngest GM when he took that Thunder job. And then Pritchard in the front office for the Indiana Pacers. This is how you're going to see teams built with this new apron rules. They've maximized being ahead of the game with these young guards that are on cheap contracts that are superstars. You've got key veterans in place. You see the Pacers had Turner already in place, McConnell, guys that have experience, have been around. And then you just continue to add young talent around the guys, Nembhard, Mathurin, Nesmith. And then you go out and make the big trade for Pascal Siakam. You round out the roster that way. It's the same way with Thunder has built their roster. Obviously, we've seen their process with just pick after pick after pick. Sam Presti would get involved in every single trade for a span of 5 years. If there was a trade going down, he was taking on salary to get picks in return. And then they go out and make key trades, getting Hartenstein in free agency, going out and getting Caruso in a trade for Josh Giddey, which a lot of people may have questioned because of the youth and the timeline that he fit on. But Caruso has proved to be a invaluable asset for them. I don't think that there would be any world which the Thunder would have redid that trade, even seeing the way that Giddey finished the year in Chicago. This is how you got to build a roster. You've got to hit it while these guys are young. You've got to surround them with guys who are not on max contracts. It's going to be these guys that are tweeners. You're going to see in the $15 to $20 million range. You're not going to see teams being able to put together three max contract players and winning championships. It's just not going to happen in the world that we live in today. You're going to see more rosters being built like the ones in Oklahoma City and in Indiana. You're going to have to be able to draft well, consistently, build depth. Depth, depth, depth is going to be the key. It failed the Knicks. They weren't able to keep up depth-wise. It failed the Timberwolves. They weren't able to keep up depth-wise. And you could say that for majority of the teams that got eliminated. They just didn't have the ability to go deep into their roster. They didn't have the ability to give multiple different looks. It's just the testament to the two front offices here. Sam Presti saw way out ahead of it. And he had a plan, and now they are the arms race, the barrier. They are the blueprint for these teams in the Western Conference. There's going to be a lot of questions. Obviously, there's going to be talent out there to be had and via trade this offseason. We're already seeing it pop up now. Teams that are going to be very young, up and coming, are being heavily rumored in every single trade, whether it's the Houston Rockets, the Spurs, the Timberwolves are being thrown in there. The Raptors, who have a interesting roster, who are young, are going to be thrown into these conversations. Do they make the big trade? Do they put together a roster of high-paid, high-salary players, sacrificing depth? There's a lot of decisions to be made from these front offices, and I think that's going to significantly impact the trade markets for not only these star players, but other players that might become available, could be more valued. I think that's why the Knicks had high value in what Bridges could be versus, I mean, they've sent six first-round draft picks in a trade to get Mikal Bridges because he is the type of player like a Siakam, like a Caruso, like a Hartenstein, where it's the perfect player to plug in at a lower salary number that you're not paying the max to, that can heavily impact the way that a team plays and their impact on winning. I don't see many star players going for these outrageous pick plus player lucrative deals that we've seen in the past because it's just not sustainable in today's NBA. And so, as we expect it to be a very active offseason, that is something that, as we're about to dive into it, I wanted to focus on, especially for these two teams who have done it in the way that this CBA allows for you to do it. And they planned and they attacked it probably better than any other teams in the NBA. The Pacers and the Thunder have done it the right way. And now we're seeing one of the smallest market NBA finals in the history of the league, two teams that have never won a title under their current state. Obviously, the Sonic days is different, but as under the Thunder blueprint, they have never won it. And the Pacers have never won it. Makes for a very intriguing matchup in a team, and it doesn't have the star talent like I was talking about, but these teams are built to sustain depth. And the Thunder, and I mean, even the Pacers, really, they are built for sustained long runs, which is not something in today's game that we see a lot. We see more 2-3 year windows max. These teams are set up. I mean, the Pacers went to the conference finals this year, back in the finals. The Thunder have made the finals this year. These teams can both go multiple years making runs in this same exact spot. And I think that's not going to be something that we see a lot moving forward. As we kind of move past the finals preview here, we got to talk about a team that was in the conference finals. The New York Knicks have decided to move on from Tom Thibodeau, as it's a very surprising move to, I would say, many After their significant playoff run, there was a lot of rumors going into the playoffs and after the rocky start against the Detroit Pistons about what is the future of the New York Knicks, what is the future of Tibbs. And then they make this run. And me personally, I thought he was pretty safe that this move was not going to come, even with the rumors. But Leon Rose, that staff decided that it was time to move on. They need a fresh voice in the room. It's very it's a tough day for Tibbs. He's the most success they've had as a head coach since the late 90s. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me based on what Brunson said after the game, the respect that I think many of the players had, even with maybe some of the minutes decisions that he had. But Tom Thibodeau was a very good head coach for them, and they're going to be now searching to replace him as they look to not only make it back to these conference finals, but make a push to the NBA finals and capture something they haven't had since the mid-70s.
Yeah, there's a lot to say about this topic because it really speaks to the NBA as a whole, as no coach is safe. I mean, we've seen coaches get fired after winning Coach of the Year awards. We've seen coaches get fired after you're starting out 35 and 17 into a season. We've seen, long tenured coaches be fired. we've seen it all at this point, and seems like the Knicks are trying to use a page out of the Cleveland Cavaliers book, potentially, is what maybe. I mean, recent success, although it didn't work out for the Cavs in the playoffs this year, they did have a pretty big jolt from hiring Kenny Atkinson, who did win Coach of the Year this year. Anyways, I mean, I got to tip my cap to Tom Thibodeau because, he arguably brought the Knicks back to relevancy in a number of different ways, as you just pointed out there. 51 seasons. They were in a game seven to go to the Eastern Conference Finals last year. They make it to the Eastern Conference Finals this year. They beat the really good Pistons team, hard-fought six-game series. They are underwhelmingly underdogs against the Boston Celtics. And they go in and win that series. And then, unfortunately for them, they lose to six games to the Indiana Pacers here in the Eastern Conference Finals. And I really don't know. I didn't quite understand the move. So, a couple weeks or months ago, in our hot takes or something we did on here, I had mentioned the possibility of this happening. And I thought it could happen, especially after a Boston series, if they were to lose in a couple games. But they end up winning that series, so and they get to the Eastern Conference Finals, game six. I think that he sort of saved his job at that point, in my opinion, based on how I thought they were going to go about things. But I was wrong, or I was right, then I was wrong, and then right slash wrong again, because they ended up actually doing it just a couple, short hours after the loss to the Pacers. But I mean, I really don't know who they're going to go and get. There's some rumors about the guy from Phoenix, or no, the guy from Cleveland who was just in New York, who I'm sure you'll talk about here in just a second. But before you get into that, I have a question for you. Sort of a hypothetical here. Let's say Aaron Nesmith doesn't hit 70 threes in game one, and Tyrese Halliburton doesn't hit one of the crazier shots in NBA history, and we don't see one of the most crazy comebacks in the game one, and the Knicks win that game, and they go on to win that series. And they make it to the finals, and let's say they get swept by Oklahoma City. 4-0 sweep, not even close. Does Tom Thibodeau still, does James Dolan still end up firing Tom Thibodeau in that scenario, in your opinion?
Gosh, that's a very tough hypothetical. In my opinion, I don't think they should have fired him to begin with. But gosh, Based on the way that it kind of worked out, it seemed like that they were ready to move on regardless. And unless they had made, if it's like you said, it's a sweep, an uncompetitive sweep in the finals, it seems like this move would have been made. From the Knicks' perspective, it seemed like this was something that had been on their minds for quite a while. But unlike Denver, they didn't want to make this move late in the year and mess everything up. They wanted to let it ride. And I think it worked out for them. They got to the furthest point that they've been in 25 years. Thibodeau now moves on. And look, it seemed like, based on all the reporting, that this was something that they were preparing for and expected to do had they had not reached the point that they were hoping to get to. So to answer your question, I think yes, if it was uncompetitive, if they made it a competitive series, I think you could have they could have he could have talked him into, hey, I just need a little bit more and we're right there, and he would have gotten himself another year. But from all accounts, it seems like they were ready to move on. And yes, like you mentioned, I think Johnny Bryant, who is the associate coach for the Cleveland Cavaliers right now, who was a final contender for that Phoenix Suns job before Jordan Ott got it, who is also an assistant underneath both Johnny Bryant and Kenny Atkinson in Cleveland. And we could talk about that a little bit, as Matt Ishbia has hired yet another Michigan State guy, as he hired somebody that was an associate under video coordinator, actually under Tom Izzo. And so now their general manager comes from an assistant under Tom Izzo, and their coach has now worked with Izzo. So he's just building a Michigan State factory over there in Phoenix, and we'll see how that works out for him. I personally am a big fan of Johnny Bryant. I think he would have been the better hire there, but the connection obviously was able to get Ott that job. I think the Knicks would be very wise to look into a young up-and-coming coach rather than going for a retread. And we've seen in the past when these moves happen that it almost, if you're wanting a fresh voice, you need to go with somebody that is truly a fresh voice, who hasn't had this position before, who doesn't know how they're going to handle being a head coach, who can react on the fly, who's going to be very adaptive. So in my opinion, I think, and we look, Shams put out that they're going to cast a wide range with the search. They're going to even go into the college ranks and vet guys in that realm. But Johnny Bryant, I think, should be at the top of their list, should get an interview. And well, this is gonna be a highly coveted job, considering where the Knicks are at this point, who their star is, and it's just New York, it's primetime basketball. This is gonna be they're going to be able to get quite a wide range of candidates. They're going to get an interview with just about everybody they want. I think it was funny, the post that came out today saying they want to interview Jason Kidd and Ime Udoka, which, why would those two leave the current situations they're in? But interesting spot to be in here if you're New York. You got to get this right. You cannot afford to this hire not to work out.
You're right. It has to work out, because what this tells us, and everyone in the NBA world who follows this, is they feel that this roster is ready. They feel this roster is good to go. Maybe a couple marginal moves, but they've got their centerpieces there. It tells me that they're probably going to hang on. Well, man, I really feel mixed about this, but I think that they're going to hang on to Karl-Anthony Towns and try to probably re-sign Bridges maybe this offseason, or extend him, and maybe work around a couple things. Because towards the end of this playoff run for the Knicks, we saw that their bench actually could come in and play some decent minutes. It was just Tibbs just didn't want to do it. And saw a stat not too long ago of the top seven highest played minute trios of this NBA season all happened to be from New York Knicks combinations. So, a guy who's really not willing to go into that bench, but ended up actually doing it a little bit in the conference finals, and it worked at times. So there's we're about to talk about Kevin Durant, we might as well just jump into it, because there's a lot of rumors, you know, how would a Karl Anthony Towns, maybe Kevin Durant trade? Is that something that's possible, knowing that Karl Anthony Towns could have some connection to Phoenix with Devin Booker or whatnot, whatever it is? I mean, but that moving on from Tibbs is one of two things. It's saying we're exactly ready to go, or his sort of high minute, high usage, all these kind of things, does that turn us off from certain guys like a Giannis who maybe they're wanting to flirt with, or a Kevin Durant potentially? I believe it's one of those two things. You know, if Tibbs was sort of a turnoff for them in some way, but you're right, they got to get, regardless of any of that, they're going to have to get it right. Who, I have no idea who it's going to be. Will it be Michael Malone? Will it be Dan Hurley? Will it be is Jay Wright going to come back and coach his former Knicks, his Villanova team? I mean, who knows? It's more than likely the favorite. The betting odds is, you know, the guy who you like, Johnny Bryant, seems to be most likely. But, I mean, this can go a number of ways. But really what I'm most curious about is what they're going to do with the roster, because, you know, they have no draft capital. What are they going to do with Bridges? Because he's, you know, I believe he's extension eligible this offseason or this summer. And they've obviously got defensive issues. And did Tom Thibodeau squeeze every bit of defense he could out of this Knicks team, who played pretty poor defense all season long? I just know, you know, I would take Tom Thibodeau on my Grizzlies right now. I would trade Thomas Isalo for Tom Thibodeau right now. I know that's not going to happen, and I know Tom Thibodeau's playoff record isn't great, but he's shown he can go to a team, have an identity, and, you know, he can win ball games, and he's won 50 games multiple times with this Knicks team. So I don't know. This was, in some ways, it was really, people could see it coming. In other ways, based on how it ended here, it really stunned some people. So I really don't know exactly what this next move is going to be. Is it going to be run it exactly back? Are we going to make another splash move like we did at the deadline last year and then this past summer with Bridges? And then OG before that, and then Karl Anthony Towns as well. So it's been splash, splash, splash here for the Knicks, always in the talks of the media, just like the Los Angeles Lakers. And we're all on the edge of our seat to see what they're going to do to make even more headlines.
Yeah, and I'll give you a few more names as we're kind of discussing candidates here. I'm still surprised that this guy has not got a job. I am as big a fan of him as an up-and-coming coach as anybody. Chris Quinn, the assistant from Miami, the guy, the longtime right-hand man to help me out here.
What was it?
The Miami head coach, can't think of his name right now.
But anyways,
yeah, Spoelstra. I just talked about him earlier. But anyways, Chris Quinn, the longtime assistant under Eric Spoelstra for Miami. We talked about the Spoelstra versus Carlisle back in the day earlier. But Chris Quinn has learned, has been there for many, many years, has had a ton of head coaching interviews over the years and has not gotten a job yet. I think that's going to be a fast riser. He deserves a job. Mike Inouye, assistant coach for the Minnesota Timberwolves. We saw the job that he did stepping in for Finch last year when he got hurt. Deserves a job opportunity. Obviously, we already mentioned Johnny Bryant. If I'm the New York Knicks, those are guys that I am going to do extensive research on. I think you got to, if I'm the Knicks, I'm staying away from anything college-related. I'm not going down to the college ranks to bring them up to coach a team that's NBA finals ready. That just screams a recipe for disaster to me. There has not been a ton of success that has gone straight from college up to the pros. So I'm going to find one of these guys that have sat behind a very experienced and knowledgeable head coach. Get me a young assistant that's fast rising. We've seen that all over the league. Isalo got put in place in Memphis. Obviously, Mitch Johnson for the Spurs. You're seeing Ott get the job now. And Sacramento Kings went ahead and went young. The Knicks, I think they're going to stick with that trend and go young. Obviously, Malone's out there. James Borrego, if they want to go retread. But I say they go young, and those are some names that I'd keep an eye out on. In terms of trade packages, I think it would make a ton of sense if you're the New York Knicks to look into a Karl Towns for Kevin Durant swap. If you're Kevin Durant, I would, and we've saw the rumors, it's Spurs, it's Rockets, it's these Western Conference teams, the Timberwolves, that have been heavily rumored as names for Kevin Durant. But if you're the Knicks and if you're Durant, I think that would be appealing on both sides, as the Eastern Conference is going to be wide open. And if you're Durant, I think if you go to that team, you're going to have a lot better chance of going further in the playoffs than you will going into the Western Conference, just based on the competitive nature of both conferences. But look, there's been rumors and concerns of Karl-Anthony Towns, his fit alongside Brunson, just the way that he handles himself. There's a lot of intrigue about what his future is with the Knicks now that Tom Thibodeau is now out. In terms of Mikal Bridges, that one's interesting because you give up the significant package. Do you want to blow up this Nova Knicks experience already? Do you think that this would be the chance? And to make salaries match, it's going to be hard to do. It's going to be really hard to do a Bridges for Durant swap. But is there something where you can turn Bridges into pieces and you build out your depth while not losing ton in the starting lineup, maybe get some more picks back? I don't know that that makes a ton of sense. And he's due for a contract extension. He's got the 1 year left next year at about 24 million. It would be easy to put in a lot of trades if that was something they chose to do. It just wouldn't be able to be a deal where they could upgrade dollar wise in a deal. So that's something that I think the Knicks should look into, a Cat for Durant trade. What does that look like? And the betting odds as of today have the Phoenix Suns as the odds on favorite to land Karl-Anthony Towns if they so choose to move on from him. Maybe in a potential Kevin Durant trade. We'll see how that all works itself out. In terms of Durant, it seems like Phoenix right now wants the Rockets. It seems like Durant wants the Spurs. That is going to be an arms race and a battle that is going to be fascinating. And Shams Charania reports today on NBA Today on ESPN that the Phoenix Suns are looking to get this deal done before June 25th, which is the round one of the NBA draft, which could take place 2 days after the NBA Finals ends if it goes seven games, which we're not expecting it to. But the NBA schedule making is a joke, and it doesn't give any time for us to really breathe. But I love the offseason, so I'm excited for that period. But what do you think about the Kevin Durant sweepstakes? It's going to be very hard for the Timberwolves to do it salary purposes, and they've got contracts that are expiring that they're going to have to figure out. The Knicks can get it done in a Cat plus Tyler Kolek and stuff for Durant, and then it seems like Durant's camp is pushing. There's Gambino, I can't think of exactly name, but 29 years covering the Phoenix Suns at a local news station has a ton of plugged in sources say Durant's preferred destination is the Spurs. Other reports in Phoenix say the Suns are motivated to get their picks back from Houston. So this could be a very interesting dynamic here as we move into the offseason.
Yeah, it seems based on just Ishbia's comments, Ishbia's just mentality, that they should probably go after a Karl-Anthony Towns just to stay relevant, to stay in that playoff hunt. Whether if I think that's what they should do or not, this is just what I think. Ishbia, based on his mindset of less need, F those picks kind of deal, but the smart thing to do, probably go to Houston, get your picks back. You're probably not going to be that good, so your picks could be decent. anyways. And then, you know, actually, you know, San Antonio's really got some goodies too that he can offer. But they're probably not going to give you, you know, the star of a Karl Anthony Towns by any means. And if you're New York, this is what's, you know, interesting to me, because that would give you, now, this is just saying if they keep the roster as currently constructed, Brunson, OG, Durant, Bridges, and Robinson. You know, OG, Durant, and Bridges are all three. I look at them as all three pretty much small forwards, wing guys who, you know, can all kind of do similar things. I mean, obviously OG and Mikal really can lock you down defensively, but I just, you know, I'm a Durant. I've always been a Durant fan as far as just how he plays and stuff like that. I think he could fit in anywhere. It seems a little weird to me to have three guys who are just very similar. But the good thing about really all three is none of them need the ball. You know, Brunson is going to need the ball a lot. But those three guys really don't need the ball. Although I'd like to see Bridges be more involved next year. We'll see who they can bring in as a coach. If Bridges, you know, with some smoke around him with Thibodeau early in the year and whatnot. But anyways, you know, I think Durant to the Suns would be great for the NBA as far as ratings goes. Just, I mean, this should have probably happened a couple of years ago if they would have won the lottery with, you know, they could have brought Durant, Irving, and Zion together back in, I believe that was 2019. But the Knicks didn't get so lucky with that lottery. Anyways, having Durant to New York again would be something great for ESPN and all those platforms. So I think that should be something to look for. But if you're Phoenix, I think, you know, pairing Devin Booker up with Towns could be something. I mean, not by any means do I think they're going to win the West or anything like that, but I really don't like what they've had at center. Since, you know, I've never been a big DeAndre Ayton fan. I think getting rid of him was probably a good thing, although it seemingly wasn't, because they really haven't had much stability at that center position. They traded for Nick Richards in the season, and I didn't really love what he gave them. He didn't do as much as I thought he would there. So, you know, he brings them some stability to that center slash power forward, whatever you're going to play. But I know what I'm going to get out of Karl Anthony Towns. I gave him his credit last episode, but he's going to be a guy who can go out there and shoot the ball and score the ball and make some flashy plays, but he's not a smart defender. He's going to take some really, really dumb fouls. You know, he can be lackluster at times, but him and Devin Booker together again, throwing it back to 2014, 2015 Kentucky days, would be fun for Matt Ishbia to sit on the sideline and watch him win 30 to 40 ball games and not tank. So maybe that's the way that Mr. Ishbia is going to go, as he's rekindling a Tom Izzo organization without the actual Tom Izzo who actually makes Michigan State run. But he's seemingly, as you talked about, now their owner, their GM, and their head coach, all Michigan State, or should I say Tom Izzo factory tree branches there.
You mentioned DeAndre Ayton. What a world we live in when the Indiana Pacers offered him a 4-year max contract offer sheet, which the Phoenix Suns then matched. We would be living in quite a different world if that deal had gone through for the Pacers. I think they got to be loving the fact that the Suns matched that deal. But like you mentioned, I think New York would be primetime basketball. It'd be very intriguing to see Kevin Durant slot in at that four spot, then Mitchell Robinson slides into the five. I think it makes him a better basketball team, honestly. And I'm a Cat fan. I think there's a ways he can be successful. I think he's better at the four. But I mean, Durant in that situation, does it propel them that much higher to be a championship contender if they don't have the bench to put around that team? That's something that I would be waiting to be seen if that's a
Which they do. They are still going to have, luckily for them, they've got McBride for cheap for now. They can, I think they might be able to keep Shamet around. And who was, they had another guy, the guard that came in for him a little bit down the stretch in the conference finals. He's Dreads. Can't think of his name right now.
DeLon Wright.
Yeah. You know, he can do some things. So they've got, that's a eight guys there that they can play. I mean, obviously probably need some more, but I like Deuce McBride, and they do have him for cheap for now.
And they're going to have to address, I think, regardless if they were to make a deal with Towns, you're going to have to address the center's position in some form or fashion. I don't think you're going into next year with Towns and Robinson as your only two centers. You're going to have another option there. That
Yeah,
just was something.
Robinson's injury prone.
And you don't know what you're getting out of Towns foul wise. You gotta add depth to that position. And the front court really, as a whole, you gotta add depth. I think, like you mentioned, McBride. I think we're both fans of him. Shamet, Wichita State alum. Love me some Wichita State. Wish they'd bring back Ron Baker. Heck, go get Fred VanVleet if the Rockets don't want to keep him around, but that could be a very exciting team if they ever go out and get Durant. I think that's one of my favorite landing spots for him. I just don't know how practical it is, whether Durant would even want to go there. I don't think that's very likely that he would want to go there, based on just everything surrounding the Knicks and him in the past. It really does seem like this is an arms race from the two Texas teams. I think it's eventually going to be a situation where the Rockets are going to win out. They're going to get him for the 10th pick, plus Jalen Green, plus filler salary, and whatever else might be requested from Phoenix. I'd struggle to buy into the Spurs skipping steps. Once again, you already had one star player force your hand to San Antonio with De'Aaron Fox coming over at the trade deadline. Brian Wright, the general manager, has been very proactive in his pressers and media and getting it through local media, national media, that the Spurs are not going to be a team to skip steps. They want to do it the right way. They want to build it the way the Thunder have built it, something that is sustainable. I did see an interesting proposal today that if you're going to do this Durant trade, you're setting yourself up for two separate timelines here. Under Victor Wembanyama, you're going to set yourself up for a timeline where you're going to push your chips in, try to win a championship now. Durant, Fox, and Wembanyama, you're going to have to sacrifice probably Vassell or Barnes or KJ. One of these players is going to have to be the centerpiece. You're probably going to have to do two for salary matching purposes. And you're more than likely in this deal, you're not giving up the number two pick. You're definitely not giving up Castle. Like, those are definitely off limits in a Durant trade. He's going to go for not significant value compared to what star players maybe have gone for in the past. So that's going to be something to where once this kind of run ends its course, and the thing about it is with Durant, he is on a 1+1. He's got a player option. He's going to be wanting some sort of extension out of this trade, whoever he goes to, whether it's undo the player option, make that a permanent year deal plus another year or 2 more years, he's going to want to be extended and taken care of almost to the age 40, which is going to probably, but it's going to be after his contract were to run out. So that's part of it. So if you're the Spurs, you make this deal, you set yourself up on a timeline for the duration of that Durant contract, you run it through with Fox, Durant, Wembanyama, and then after that were to move over, you transition into your second timeline under Wembanyama when you're going to have him on his max extension. And then you're going to have Harper Fox most likely as your backcourt and then start window number two for that team. So that's an interesting proposal. It's just what we've talked about so much. And I'm ready for the Spurs to be competitive again. If they make a trade for a Durant or a Giannis, I'm going to be ecstatic about it. I'm going to be calling for us to win the title. It's just the emotions that I'll go through as a fan. But the logical thing in me says, do not do this trade and keep building it smartly, where you don't have to look at this as a two timeline system where you can just sustain success all the way through the duration of this Wembanyama. You don't have to reset at the conclusion of a Durant Fox Wembanyama era. You can just continue to ride Fox, Castle, Harper most likely is the number two pick. Ride it out, continue to build, keep all your picks, keep all your players, and build depth like the two teams that we see in the finals right now. But if it happens, I hope it makes them a competitive team. I hope they go for it. I hope they make moves around the margins, aggressive with their $15 million mid-level exception from the non-taxpayer. They'll have a 5.3 trade mid-level that they can use as well if they were to make a deal like this. So that's $20 million worth of contracts that you can invest. We'll see if the Holt family, who are the majority owners, plus the new group that they have bought in as business partners with, are going to be willing to invest into the luxury tax to go out and push for a title if they make a move like this. But it seems like that's what Durant's pushing for. Again, like we said, Phoenix seems like they are pushing heavily and they are calling Houston's phone every single day. And it seems like Houston's more reluctant. But the report was, now that Phoenix is lessening their asking price, Houston has once again re-engaged and are more interested in these discussions. To me, it seems like this is going to come down to a Texas team. They're too high odds in terms of betting odds to get this done. Sounds like it's going to happen before the draft. So we've got about 3 weeks from today for that to take place. And we got some fireworks on the horizon, it seems like.
Yeah, a lot of moving pieces there. I just think there's no telling at this point what Matt Ishbia is going to do. It's like he's driving a plane here, and we don't know which direction we're going. He says we're going one place, we might be going another. I don't really know him. He really needs to go ahead and land the plane and play it real conservative and probably try and rebuild and get as many picks as possible. But there's no telling what he's going to do. So I'm here for it. If I was a Phoenix fan, I would feel pretty mixed emotions on where they'd be sitting right now and what, if I'm a Phoenix fan, I'm just hoping for the best possible package. And if I'm a Spurs fan, I'm hoping I can sort of dwindle him like y'all did with Fox. If you get a notification and you gave him get Durant for essentially nothing, you got to feel happy about that. All while we still got this Giannis stuff moving, but as the further we get into it, it seems like, which I know that we're not the trade, you can't even trade players right now, but the more and more we move into it, the more and more I feel like Giannis will probably stay put, given all these new rules and aprons and things that you talk about that was in the latest CBA. So I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen, but the main focus right now is the Oklahoma City Thunder, Indiana Pacers game one tomorrow night. And can the Pacers threaten Oklahoma City in any way, as pretty much all of America has penciled in that this won't even be much of a series?
Yep, there's so much to look forward to. Obviously, the finals is going to be really entertaining basketball. The off season's right around the corner. There's a lot of drama. Before we kind of wrap up here, just want to talk about a little bit. The Utah Jazz have hired Austin Ainge, son of Danny Ainge, to be their new president of basketball operations. He's going to be the final call on all roster decisions for that organization. He's going to report directly to the owner, Ryan Smith. big shock waves throughout the NBA as Austin has been a focal point within the Boston Celtics franchise for, I believe, 13 years now, was the assistant general manager under Brad Stevens. So this is a big time move for the Utah Jazz. His dad is going to report to him. The GM, Justin Zanuck, is going to report to him. In their introductory press conference, he said, "We will not be doing what we have done in the past, which is this intentional tanking." He said, "Those days are over." Whether that means the Jazz might look to retool this roster really quickly, or they're just going to shell off all their pieces and organically tank. I do like the fact that he said that they will not be doing the manipulation of the lineup anymore. Seems like he's got all of his ducks in a row. I wish he would have given a little bit more than just keep stacking good decisions was the key phrase that he used throughout this thing, which the Jazz obviously need. But I wish he would have given a little bit more detailed plan. Very vogue, but obviously he's media trained. They're not going to give away too much. But Jazz are bringing him in due to his draft acumen. Served as a G assistant coach throughout the G League. Obviously, Danny Ainge being on staff there already has helped him land this job, but the kid's got a lot of stuff to him. Very smart, very well respected. He was going to get a job like this sooner than later. But the Jazz make this move. Interesting to see how that affects the way they handle this offseason. Based on all reporting from Utah Jazz reporters, like Lauri Markkanen's pretty safe there, unless they just get a massive package with that new contract. I don't see that happening, so I imagine he'll stick around. But they got a lot of pieces to shuffle. They got the fifth overall pick. Sounds like that's going to be Austin Ainge's first big move is that draft pick, and then he'll kind of reshuffle the roster from there. But like you mentioned, the finals tomorrow night, which when y'all are listening to this podcast, it'll be tonight, 8:30 in Oklahoma City. Expecting a barn burner. I'm gonna expect a close game. I don't think anybody runs away with this one. Tensions are gonna be high. Does the experience of the Pacers allow them to stay in it? Or will the Thunder use that talent to push this to five games is what people are expecting. So fun times ahead. As we continue, we'll get more podcasts out to you. The off season, we're going to have a ton of stuff. Expect some breaking news episodes throughout the off season, which will likely be shorter, but we'll want to hit on major news that happens in the moment. But other than that, you can check us out on all of the socials, wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Instagram, Twitter, all of that good stuff at the State Line Fast Break Pod. This has been episode 18. We thank you for listening.